This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. This half hour is brought to you by Larson & Larson. They are my intellectual property lawyers, and they should be yours. At the bottom of the hour, my guest will be Jonathan Friesen, whose new book, Unfolding, is coming out today. But first, I'm turning to my guest in the studio, Tim McGee. Hi, Tim.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm so, you know, I'm always thrilled to have an author in the studio, but I am really honored to have you in the studio because I admire your book. It is so amazing. It is called Worthy McGuire, and it lives up to its name. It is a worthy book. It is a book that I hope that all of my listeners will just get this book because it is quite impressive. I was amazed to discover that it was your first book.
Yes.
Wow. I mean, it is such a beautifully done book. I was blown away with it, actually, and I was thinking there were so many things that I love about the book, and I, knowing, of course, that you come from Michigan, I was a particular thrill for me. I'd say, whoa, great, another great Michigander writer. And your use of language is fantastic. And I want to just, I'm going to, recently I had the narrator of the Audible version of A Gentleman in Moscow on, and Nicholas Guy Smith, and he read part of the book on the air, and it was just fantastic. And I wish I could read this in such a voice as he has, but I want to just read one sentence from your book. She felt a thrum of excitement as she was enveloped in the smell of bacon, sausages, and eggs. She hoped they would have one more day to explore London. Well, right there, I'm telling you, you're the first one I read who actually used the word thrum, which I think is an absolutely delightful word, correctly in a sentence. And it is, it just blew me away when I read that. I said, oh, I like this. But now we have to go back and tell a little bit about what Worthy McGuire is about, who he was, and because it evokes so many emotions in me, this book. Because one, you're from Michigan, and you refer to a lot of things in Michigan that mm-hmm. I know those places. It's funny, you'll mention some place, and I'll say, oh, I've been there. And I always love that in a book. But I particularly love that, of course, Worthy McGuire is a World War II vet who was in Normandy. And my dad was in Normandy. Mm. And he was there. He won a Silver Star. Wow. And so when I read this book and when you talk about what Worthy went through, I was just filled with emotion. So tell everyone about this book.
Worthy McGuire is a story about a World War II veteran who, at the end of his life, decides to fulfill a promise he made during the war. And it's a story about, actually, it's about the war, but it's also a story about a dysfunctional family. And kind of
very, woo.
And it's really a chance for redemption. It starts off with Worthy is in his late 80s when we first meet him in Michigan, and he's made a decision to go back to France. And he realizes, as he makes this decision, he can't go alone, and his choices of companion are limited. Most of his friends are dead, and so. He realizes that he has to come and rely on the one thing that he really hasn't been able to rely on, which is his family. So he reluctantly makes the choice of asking his two grandkids to accompany him on this trip, and they don't know why they're going. So that's kind of the setup for the story, and it's about that trip that the entire family makes.
It is. There are a lot of books written about dysfunctional families. And actually, quite often, they just get on my nerves. I'll tell you, I can take just so much of the dysfunctional family. But this one is delightfully dysfunctional. I mean, I really enjoyed reading about their dysfunction. And it's this book is full of humor and great sensitivity. And the way that you have developed the characters is fantastic.
Thank you.
I'm so impressed with it. I don't know, you know, it's always when somebody comes along and writes a really great book, I think, wow, how did it come to, did it come to you all in sort of one go? Did you see this book in your head, or you had the whole story laid out before you sat down and wrote it?
Actually, it started off, my father was in the war, and so it started off as an idea of wanting to write something about the Greatest Generation. And I actually had, and there's two kind of props in the book that are important, as a stack of letters and a watch. And I actually had a stack of letters from my dad who he wrote during the war as well, and a watch that he had when he graduated high school. And the story germinated. I actually took a trip to Normandy with my wife and a couple of other very close friends. And as we were traipsing around, it kind of formed in my head. And I started off with the end. I knew
where you wanted to bring it. And then you had to develop it. Yeah. And you've developed it beautifully. And the funny thing about, you know, they were these boys. I mean, they were boys when they were out there. Yeah. And they were so amazing. What they did was so amazing. And they really didn't talk about it. Like, my father didn't talk about those years. He didn't really, it's only near the end that I got him to open up and talk, because I also wanted to know. And so it's the way you've done it, this sort of reveal, that there's a constant reveal throughout the book. It's almost like it is a suspenseful, mm-hmm. it's you don't know what's going to happen, and you don't know which of the characters are going to develop in what direction. Are they going to get better through the process? Are they going to get worse? Are they just going to just collapse out of everything? So there's all this sort of little bit of mystery, a little bit of suspense that carries the story along so beautifully. And now, I noticed that all of the reviews you got are 5-star. And this is really quite unusual to have so many 5-star. It's not all your family doing it that way, you know. And the thing is, I think the common thread is that the story carries you along. And many, many people will say, oh, I couldn't put it down. I needed to know. And this is exactly how I felt with the book, that it just one page after another. And we have in the family, we have the grandchildren, and of course we have his son, who Worthy has a very strained relationship with. But yeah, how you've made them grow throughout the book is amazing.
Thank you. It was I wanted to explore kind of that dysfunction family in terms of how people relate with each other, but I also wanted to move it along in a way that was positive. So that's was also kind of a goal of mine. I've got this dysfunctional family, but it's also a chance for redemption, and don't miss it.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I think you've done a beautiful job with this. And now, you've done a follow-on book from this?
Actually, I'm working on one right now. Yeah, and it started off as a single book bringing back the Maguires, but I had this idea about going back to the war and did a lot of research. And actually, the second book, although it's a follow-on to Worthy Maguire, it's turning out to be a standalone, and it's actually about from the perspective of a German prisoner of war at the end of World War II, how he deals with being captured and interned in a prison camp in Wales. And the Maguire family actually will be involved in it a little bit, but it's a setup for the third book, which I'm also working on right now.
Wow. Well, you're turning into a prolific writer,
yeah,
huh?
It's
amazing. You had a full career in a business, in business, and then you retired at 50?
Yes.
Something like that?
Yes.
Nice and young. So you have plenty of time to write. And, you know, it is such a wonderful thing when you start writing and you feel this sort of all of this power germinating in you, because it is a power to be a writer, because you create the world, you create these people, and you can do anything you want with them. Really, when you know, if you really get tired of them, you just kill them or something. You know, just turn it into. You know, so it's you have this absolute power of creation, and it's such a joy. And now with you, you as you said, you'd had to do some research here. What was the research involved?
Well, it was interesting. The there's a flashback scene to the D-Day event, and I started doing a lot of reading. Stephen Ambrose, who's a historical writer, and did a lot of reading on his books about D-Day invasion. And the internet is a wonderful thing, because I was able to actually find, it's the Fighting 29th. That was the division that actually was on the first wave of Omaha Beach in World War II. And I was actually to find on the internet their website. And I went into their website and was able to find what they called after action reports, which were actual reports written by officers after the battle, and read through many of those. And that's where I got the context for when Worthy is storming the beach of Omaha, using a lot of that information to kind of build the story. Even though it's fiction, I would say that I tried to be as true as I could in terms of the terrain and the resistance and those first few days of the invasion, tried to build that into it and make it as realistic as possible.
Well, you did a great job, because it is, many times in books, they'll have this scene and it's almost, it doesn't take you there, but in your case, wow, we feel right along with Worthy as they progress inch by inch. This is amazing, and it is fun to go to these after action reports, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very revealing, and of course, a lot of historians writing about it said that the actual first few days of the invasion was very chaotic, and so I use that to my advantage. And in reading a lot about a lot of the incidents that occurred about when the Allies were, storming up the cliffs or up the ravines, and then kind of getting past the first line of the German defense and looking around and figuring out, oh, what now? And the subsequent fighting that occurred, where he meets this family, this French family, and that, of course, is all fictional, but again, I was trying to build, and our trip there, I did a lot of looking around in terms of architecture and whatnot, so again, trying to build these scenes as realistically as possible so that you could stand there today and look around and think, yeah, I could see this happening.
Yeah, it is quite a sight to go there and to see this,
it's
and
very
to know what our country sacrificed, the boys we sacrificed. Now, my father, of course, went up there, and it was a few days later that he was a little older than he wasn't an 18-year-old. He was a little older, and so everybody looked up to him. And one of the things that he loved to say all the time, he would say, "No danger," to us kids when we were young, and we'd ask him a question. Can we go somewhere? And he'd say, "No danger." And we never knew what he was saying, "No danger." I mean, and he'd do it to anything. Like, "Can we have a raise in our allowance?" "No danger." And we didn't know what he's saying, like, "No danger," all the time. And then we discovered, later on, I discovered that what he'd do is he would always walk in front of the younger guys. And if he didn't get blown up, he'd turn around and he'd say, "No danger."
Yeah.
And so that sort of became his nickname. But then he picked it up as a sort of just, I don't know, it was like you know, you kids are asking me too many questions. Don't ask me for a raise. And they're like, no danger. Yeah. So, and then, of course, that it was, he grabbed a grenade and saved a lot of lives and got the Silver Star. But he didn't talk about it himself. You have to drag all of this out of them. These guys were just amazing.
My father actually, he joined right after he graduated in 1944. And he joined right after he graduated. And then I remember thinking, as I was thinking about this book, and I thought, when I was 18, I graduated high school, and I was going to go off to college. I was figuring out, where's the next party?
Yeah.
And, you know, my dad was... He'd signed up, and he was shipped off to in Michigan. He was in Mount Clemens, which is a suburb of Detroit, and he was shipped off to a camp in Texas. And he was there with his unit, and my dad was 5'7". If he was anything, he was a little guy, and he was promoted to a sergeant. And the reason he was promoted to a sergeant was. And held back. His unit went over to Europe, and he was held back because he was one of about three or four in his company who could read and write. And so they said, we need someone who can do the admin work as well as command.
Yeah.
And he was pretty, and I didn't know any of this. When my father passed away at a fairly early age, he was 66, and my grandmother actually, years later, gave me this stack of letters that my dad had written to her while he was his 2-year stint in the Army in Texas. And I read those, and that was also part of the germination for Worthy McGuire. I was blown away because the same thing. He never talked about it. And he felt profoundly guilty that he didn't go over to Europe with his comrades. And I remember his buddies would write him and say, Teddy, you do whatever you can to stay. Do not come, because it's awful. And I had an uncle who's actually the character for DP in the book, and I had an uncle named DP who was a photographer in the Army, and he was in Europe, and he was
horrendous.
Yeah, he helped liberate one of the death camps, and it it affected him significantly. Yeah. And I didn't know that. I mean, he was always my uncle, and
yeah, you don't know.
And it was later.
What's behind what they held in and what they did for us. They were amazing. It's really an amazing generation. And I think you have done a terrific job here in bringing this out. And I would recommend this book, Worthy McGuire, to everybody. And if you have anybody in your family, if you have a grandfather, a father, and they were in the war. This is a wonderful book for them too. And I've been looking lately for books that are ideal to give to seniors' homes, mm-hmm. or as just to donate. So if you buy the book and then you want to donate it to one of the seniors' homes, I think it would be terrific. And you can find it on Amazon. It's called Worthy McGuire. And it's written by Tim McGee. And do you have a webpage?
I would tell people to go to my Amazon author page.
Go to the Amazon author page.
Yeah.
And, wow, it's nice to be down here in Florida for Michiganders. And so if there's any, you don't miss the snow.
I do not.
No, you do not. And neither do I. And so I think you have just done a wonderful job with this book. I'm looking forward to reading the next books. And I think that, it is always so much fun to discover a new writer, somebody that you haven't read before. And if you really want to have a great read, just get this book. And you'll recognize maybe some of your relatives as part of the dysfunctional. And it offers you hope. They can change. I mean, really, they can. And maybe they need a Worthy McGuire in their life, because Worthy certainly is a fantastic person. You've written, you've developed here a really memorable character, and one that anybody who reads the book will hold in their heart. And, this is the important thing. When you write a character that people will remember, and you've done that with Worthy. So I want to thank you, Tim McGee, for being here today. And I know that it's, do you have any events coming up, book signings, anything?
Not right now.
Not right now. But if you do, you let us know, and I will tell people. And when the next book is ready to come out and we'll talk about it, we'll have you back in here. Awesome. And meanwhile, I just want to tell everyone, it's just, Tim is a talent. And we're going to hear more about him. And I predict, this is my prediction, that we're going to see him hit it big. I really feel that this book is something that should be read by lots and lots of people. So I want to thank you again, Tim, for coming in today.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
My pleasure.
Okay. And everybody, when we come back, I'm going to be interviewing Jonathan Friesen, who is a very interesting writer, a young adult fiction, and he wrote the Jerk California book, which was very popular, and he's got a new book coming out today. So we'll be back in a few minutes and be talking to Jonathan. Okay, take it away.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Looking for a good book? Then get over to Miami Avenue Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach. Check out the latest books from local authors like Angela Hunt, who wrote the book for the film Risen, or Bonsu Brenvick, whose books preserve the memories of the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel. What do you enjoy reading? A thriller? A romance? How about a mystery or a sci-fi? At the Book Nook, you'll find it all. Remember, one of the joys of life is to read. Located in Indian Rocks Beach, look for the blue building with the mermaid on the side, on the corner of Miami Avenue and 2nd Street, two blocks south of the post office. Open Tuesday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday, noon to 4. And don't forget, while you're there, check out Miami Avenue's great collection of Florida wines, local art, and fantastic gifts. Miami Avenue Book Nook, where you will be inspired to read.
Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script, get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my next guest, Jonathan Friesen. Hi. Is Jonathan there?
He is.
Hi. How are you, Jonathan?
I'm doing real fine, thanks.
Okay. Are you up there in Minnesota?
I am. It's a little chilly, but, you know, we're getting by.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm a Youper. And,
okay, so you know about that stuff.
Okay, but I'm in Florida now. I gave that up. Okay, I couldn't take any more snow like that for anything, you know, other than maybe for skiing. But I'd have to be always in the lodge probably. So.
No, I get it. I get it. I enjoy a trip to Florida once in a while.
Okay, well we're down here in glorious sunshine, and I just want to say how very impressed I am with this new book that you just came out with today. Today's the launch date, right? Yeah, it's unfolding. Absolutely. And I'm just holding it up. I have a podcast here so people can see it online, and I'm holding up your book, Unfolding. And really very, very impressive. One of the things, you know, I always tell people, look at that first sentence of a book, and it tells you a lot about what's happening. And boy, this is a nice opening sentence. She dropped from the Oklahoma sky. And boom. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That tells us a lot, and we know where we're going with that line. And it's funny, just I think, what, a few weeks ago, a woman was actually picked up in her tub and in one of these whirlwind things, and she survived it.
Yeah, you know, you hear that every once in a while about how people are, and especially animals. You hear a lot about animals. They're transported sometimes miles and actually almost set down with extreme care. And you wonder, how could that happen when the same storm destroys so much around it? But that's how the story opens.
Well, you know, of course, in this case, the one who is dropped is a girl, a baby in a cradle. And I, again, always at first few pages have to grab you, and it grabs. It's so funny how she lands, and the two women coming out of their house see her, and they both want to fight over whose property she landed on.
That's right.
I thought that was such a cute, really, you know, that. Just that little touch there. Whoa, that sort of set the tone that you're going to have a lot of interesting things happening in this story.
Yeah, you know, the town that she lands in, Gullery, Oklahoma, nothing much good happens there anymore. And boy, when something like this occurs and a child falls out of heaven, almost literally, there's a squabble for a piece of her or all of her in this case, but they soon figure that out, and it's probably for Jonah's good that Jonah, the main character, his mother lost that particular argument.
And now, of course, the story is about Jonah, and as with all of your books, we are dealing with these are young adult fiction books, and I think that you have made a point, of course, of writing about people who have problems. It's not all cookie cutter. Everyone has problems, and in Jonah's case, he has epilepsy.
Correct.
And of course, in the in Jerk, there was, of course, you touched on the subject of tourist syndrome. So all of your characters have problems, but then you bring it forward, and you open up a whole discussion with the reader, I think.
Well, it's a hope. You know, I never think of myself when I write a new story. Let's think of a unusual condition or a different condition that I can give to my main character. That doesn't come, but I do find myself gravitating towards those teens, those older teens who are entering adulthood, with a struggle. This happens to be a very personal one, as I have epilepsy as well, and Tourette's. So I have both of those.
Oh boy!
Okay. In both those books, these are very personal conditions. And when an author decides to give a character some of the pain of their own life, it becomes a special book, certainly to them, but there's this little extra energy that goes into it. And in both those cases, both those books, both Jerk, the first one I wrote, and now Unfolding, the one that's releasing today, there is that extra potency, I think.
Well, I think the great thing about, well, both books, but that the characters might have, oh, I don't know, they're sort of neurological problems,
yep.
or
yep.
I
yep.
guess that's what you call them nowadays. But they have all the other problems and emotions that any child, you know, young person faces, all the coming of age problems, the falling in love, the having problems relating to other people, all of these. So they're very reachable books. And I think that any child, any, you know, young adult can read these books and see something of their own life in it and learn
exactly.
from it. And that if, you know, Jonah might have these problems, but he's worth knowing. And I hope that this next generation, and, you know, there are some kids who are, you know, bullies. We have this problem with bullies, but I do think there's a lot of young people nowadays who are more accepting of people with different types of situations in their life. And that's good. And I think that your books really help with that.
Yeah, it's a hope. It's certainly the hope. You know, I don't think about this book as an epilepsy book in any sense. It just happens to be an aspect of his life that Jonah needs to deal with.
Exactly. And it's just like if a kid has a problem with his parents, or he has a problem, you know, he can't play sports, or he you know, can't read. Whatever, it's dyslexia. Young people, if they read these books, and I think also it helps for parents to read these books, that it gives them a deeper understanding into sort of the mind of a teenager, which could be scary, but...
Well, no, I mean, they say now that as many young adult books are purchased by adults as they are by young adults themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a reason for that. So
I think it's great. And in this case, of course, let's talk a little bit about Jonah and Stormy. So who...
Right.
And just tell us a little bit about their relationship.
Yeah. Well, as we were mentioning earlier, you know, Stormy ending up 6 inches to the left of where she needed to be, to end up in Jonah's household, made her a neighbor. So they grew up in neighbors, as neighbors in, again, a very poor town. And there, what used to be somewhat of a thriving town, it had its origins in the coal mining era, and when that started to decline, they were thrown a lifeline in the form of a supermax prison was built in their town, and that soon employed almost everybody. And a storm, a tornado in this case, wipes out that supermax prison, the same one that brings Stormy into town and sets her down. And so the whole town is essentially instantaneously out of work. And so it's really kind of a hard scrabble, depressed economy. It's a hard life to live in Gullery. And that's where these two kids are growing up, where there isn't a lot to do, but side by side as neighbors, they have formed somewhat of an unusual alliance, a friendship, certainly on Stormy's, in her mind, and in Jonah's mind, always wishing for a little bit more than that, but never quite willing to cross those lines and just admit how he feels about his rather striking neighbor, just because of her ability. And what her ability seems to be is a unique sense of getting a premonition. She's not a prophet. She just has feelings. She has inklings. Something is going to happen. Sometimes she gets more than that. But when it comes to Jonah, she gets very specific information. She knows when he's going to have a seizure, for example, and she kind of becomes his savior in that, as his mind throws him to the ground. These large grand mal seizures that I remember having so well. She's the one who's there to find him, and she knows when they're coming. It's almost like they're connected in a way beyond your average connection that I think will make the reader wonder why are these two connected in this way. And because of that, he doesn't want to lose her. He doesn't want to risk losing her, and he needs her. And it's a hard thing to need somebody that you love, because you don't want to lose the friendship aspect, but you want to be able to express your emotion. He never quite finds a way to do that. So those are the two characters that are followed throughout the book. Jonah takes a job. They rebuild the prison, but they don't fund it. The government doesn't fund it, so it essentially stands empty. And it's empty except for one tornado museum that every once in a while a visitor will happen through Gullery, and Jonah will be the tour guide of this tornado museum, speaking of the tornadoes that have come through town. And it also houses exactly one prisoner who doesn't seem like he's much of a prisoner. He doesn't seem very eager to leave, at least not initially. And Jonah can't quite figure out why there's this drifter who seems very content to live behind bars, and why everyone in town seems very content to leave him there. That really becomes the relationship that kicks the story into gear when that situation gets unsettled.
Well, I think unfolding is it's an unusual book in that you have this town that really is a mystery in itself.
Yes.
And you develop it through the story. I think really it's interesting, and I think that readers are always looking for something of substance, and in this case, I think they will find it when they go through your book and discover.
I hope so. I became kind of enamored with secrets. I do a lot of speaking across the country, and one of the places I end up speaking at occasionally is in jail. I get invited into the correctional facilities, and I'll speak to prisoners. And one particular talk I had given, they take away the prisoners' names and they give them numbers when they go into prison. It's prison. And they brought in about 90 prisoners in their orange jumpsuits, and they all yelled their numbers as they came in. And they sat up on the bleachers there in front of me, and there were lots of guards with lots of guns between three sections. The ones on my left had committed murders and assaults, and the ones straight up from me had committed some kinds of sexual crimes and rapes, and the ones on my right were just labeled unstable, emotionally unstable. And those are the divisions that they divided these inmates into. And I spoke for about an hour, and they left. And as they left, they yelled their number on the way out, 90 and 89, 88, 87, and 86. He didn't go out the door. He turned, and he came right towards me. And he was a large guy. I'm 6'5" myself. And he was looking me right in the eye. So he was a tall fella.
as well, and a lot bigger than I am. And I was kind of wondering if this was an okay thing, because the people behind him were following him. And so just like that, I had 30 inmates surrounding me. I was in a sea of orange, and kind of trying to get the guard's attention, like, is this okay?
Okay, yeah.
But they came quickly, but they didn't whisk them away. And I think it's because of what they heard. And what they heard was this one inmate absolutely bawling. He was crying like, I haven't heard people cry very often. And through it, he was telling me everything he did. And I could tell you exactly where he sat, which group he was in. He was telling me about lives he had taken and the manner in which he'd done it and how sad he was that he had, and he'd never come back here if he could ever get out. And he was unloading. And you could tell with the tears, this was not like an initial. He didn't do this all the time. He was unloading something that had been buried in him for a very long time, secrets.
You touched a nerve.
When I finally got out, they led me through, the four locked checkpoints on the way out of the prison, and the guy who was leading me out just said, that's never happened before, but none of those people have fathers. I think you became their dad for a little while. So I guess I have 30 kids in prison, and while I'm not happy about that, I'm rather proud of the way that this young man finally shared some stuff. And on the way home, I was thinking, wonder how many other secrets are just buried in prison? How many other untold stories there are there? And that's really where this book came from. That was the origin. Is in this book there is a secret, buried with this drifter, and that secret kicks the whole story into motion. And it was just kind of a fascinating premise to me to then to think about a secret is in itself. An imprisonment, in a sense, and we're all imprisoned. And I started thinking of Jonah and his seizures, and that he's sort of imprisoned by his physical condition. And this whole idea of secrets and imprisonment, and then the town itself is hiding this tremendous secret from the outside world. So it was this layer upon layer of just secrets, and it became the theme of the book, actually. And I'm very proud of it. So out today, unfolding. It's a good one.
I think it's a good one. And it's available, of course, on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and everywhere. And I just want to say that, I think you've done a great job with this book. And I'm sure that it will also touch people in people who aren't aware of epilepsy, or what goes along with it, will be touched. And I think it's just a good book, and it's a book that I think deserves to be reread. So I'm hoping that you'll have a great success with it. I must add, I wanted to say, now of course you were a teacher, I can see that you do a lot of speaking engagements, and I happened to come across one of your things on YouTube, and I want to say that you are so funny. You should be a stand-up comedian. I'm talking about the one about your daughter being in soccer.
My daughter. Yeah. Well.
This is, I mean, I wish there was an award that they could give you, like, for the best, like an Emmy for the best short presentation. This is so funny. And it's, I mean, it's funnier than Seinfeld. It is, because I think it's from the heart.
It's funny because it's real, right? I mean, it's what kids really do on the soccer field when they're 4 years old, and how they and how they really act, and then, but it gets at kind of what becomes my theme whenever I speak, is that we all, as human beings, we just want to know two things. Does anybody see us, and does anyone like what they see? It's really what we're after, and we're after it at 4 years old on a soccer field. We're after it when we're in teens, and we're looking around, does anyone see me, anyone like what they see? And we're after it when we get older, and we want to hear from our kids, but they don't contact us as much as we'd like. And when we grow older, and we're after it, are we still seen? Does anybody still like what they see? Are we still relevant to this world? I mean, it's our universal questions, and we ask them at every stage. And it's what I try to put into all my main characters. It's how I start a book, really, is I ask, you know, how do those questions fit? How would this character ask those questions? What would be their expression of that? Because we all ask them differently. Some of us, you know, especially as we're, you know, in our teenage, we make sure that we're seen. We do things sometimes that are quite contrary to what, you know, is going to benefit us. Just so we can be seen. Kids will do that too. And as we get to be an adult, we're still searching for that, for those affirmations. So that's kind of where the book starts. How does Jonah? How would he ask that question? And so that the, all the stories that I end up telling when I speak, kind of just remember back to when I was, that's actually part of a much longer talk, about a 40-minute talk in which I'm just telling stories about my own situation.
Well, I'm telling you, if Johnny Carson were alive and he put you on The Tonight Show, I mean, you'd be a star. Really? That one routine is better than anything I've seen in years on late night television. It's fantastic.
Well, I appreciate that. And it actually happened. So what do you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't even have to have a speechwriter.
Yeah, well, that's the nice thing. That's the beauty of it. It's so real and hilarious. I'm going to put a link on my Facebook page for my readers, okay, my listeners to go in and look at this, because I think once they see that, they'll say, I have to read all his books. I need to know more about this guy. And your writing is excellent. And I want to read one more line just to people. So many of my listeners are writers, or they want to be writers, right, or they want to improve their writing. And there's one line in your book. I'm just going to read a shortened version of it.
Yeah.
I'll go ahead. Seven tornadoes dance through the night. They teased and jabbed their twisty fingers. Wow. Nobody's ever described a tornado quite like that. And I liked it. I mean, I thought, wow, this is fantastic writing.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, it's fun to think of different ways just to describe the, you know, the things we see every day. And I think that's one of the fun things about being a writer, is you get to let your mind think of how can I make even a rather horrific event, how can I bring it close to a person? Well, I don't know, but I remember even writing that line, looking down at my arthritic thumb, my twisty finger.
Well,
yeah, that's it. That's a tornado. It's a twisty finger, just like my big old thumb.
Well, so, it's a fantastic, you know, fantastic writing. You know, and now, do you have a webpage?
I do. It's www.jonathanfriesen.com.
And people can go there and read more about you. And
I'm actually even more active on Facebook.
Okay.
Author Jonathan Friesen.
Okay.
That's where I write a lot of little 1 a.m. thoughts that end up being the best things that I write.
Okay, well, people have to follow you. And Jonathan, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. Wonderful to talk to you. I'm going to share this soccer routine with everybody because it's funny. It's funny. And
good.
So good luck with this book. Have lots of fun. I know you're going to be doing a lot of touring and visiting people. And this is fantastic. So,
well, you got to be my absolute first. And so, hey, thank you for helping.
It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. You're a great writer. Thank you again. Okay.
You're very welcome.
Okay. Bye bye now.
Okay. Bye bye now.
Okay, that was nice. He is a nice guy. I will do a link to this hilarious, hilarious skit. Johnny Carson would have loved it. And if Johnny Carson would love it, you know it has to be funny. And so I just want to say, everybody, join me on Thursday right here at 11 a.m. because my guest is going to be Nick Petrie. A few weeks ago, I had on his agent, Barbara Poyle, from the Irene Goodman Literary Agency. And she tells me that Nick is just a fantastic guy. And, of course, I just read his book, and I think you will all enjoy listening to the interview. And meanwhile, I should remind you that Irene Goodman's auction for A Critique is starting tomorrow. It is an ideal way for you to find out from the top of the line, the very, very best literary agent in New York. She will give you a critique. All the money that she raises for these auctions goes to charity. So you can go to IreneGoodman.com and find out the details. But it's well worth entering. It's an auction, and you make a bid, and the bid goes up and up, and then hopefully you will win, and she will give you a detailed critique and also advice on what you have to do in order to get yourself published. So it's a wonderful opportunity. And then just meanwhile, remember that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen or in an audible book, especially if you can get Nicholas Guy Smith to do the audible version. It is so fantastic. And just come back here on Thursday. And meanwhile, find your joy and share it and say something nice to somebody. And just have a great day. And I'll say something nice to Chris in the control room, who's so helpful to me all the time. So this is Patsy with a Z saying see you on Thursday at 11 right here on Tantalk Radio. Bye.